Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Tar Pit for week one of The Amazing Race 33. The pits are back open, and we are ready to dive in. I am Mike Bloom here with our bonus Amazing Race coverage. We started this back in season 32, and it has survived through to season 33. This is everything extra we have to talk about with The Amazing Race. Some feedback from you all, some social media, some secret scenes, and basically everything else we can wrap our brains around about The Amazing Race that couldn't just fit in one podcast proper. We have a great gang of blokes and chaps and all the other British slang terms you want to use here, even though there are no other blokes or chaps on here besides myself, to talk about the first two episodes of The Amazing Race 33. As mentioned before on our recap proper, Rob Saturnino is in absentia, but of course I could not be here if I was not joined by the corner angle of our TAR triangular coverage, Jessica Leese. Jess, how are you?
Hey, Mike. I'm glad we're bringing back the Tar Pit, because I would feel really bad if we were selling T-shirts of a show that we never intended to do again.
Yeah, that's also very true. It would be almost like one of those nostalgia things, though, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Rolling Stones tour 97, like, It's obviously maybe if it was of a different band that wasn't still touring, it would be more applicable. But this idea of, oh, this relic that is long gone by, now you can wear it at any, you know, family events that you want to show off you were there back then.
Yeah, it's a real collector's item. But now we're running a series two. So make sure you get the original, because that's the one that's going to retain its value.
Exactly. And then maybe we'll have some people come and be like, I like the Tar Pits better back during season 32 when they were playing Gary and D'Angelo clips. That's the good stuff. Play the hits, people, not your new stuff. But no matter what the tune, I'm so happy to have this person on talking The Amazing Race, because I think it's safe to say she is a recent convert to the show, as maybe many people out there. And so I don't know if she'll represent you necessarily, but she certainly brings a new opinion to this. But she's far from a new voice in our RHAP community. Of course, you know her from her work most recently on the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City coverage with Jacob Jones over on Reality TV Wrap-Ups. But she's talked Big Brother before. She's talked Survivor before. And now it's time for her to finally engage with the final jewel in the crown of CBS Reality TV. Makes sense talking about the queen proper or a lookalike. So happy to be talking with Maggie Morgan. Maggie, how are you?
Hi, guys. Oh, my gosh. I'm so excited to be here, and I'm so excited to talk to you. I started watching The Amazing Race after Big Brother 23 ended, and there was nothing on television for me to watch three times a week anymore because Survivor's only on once a week. And so I started my binge, and there's like nobody in my life who listens. So I've been like furiously texting my thoughts to Mike Bloom, and I'm so excited that I finally get to say it out loud and like talk about how I've been feeling watching this show. I've made it through, I think, like seven seasons in the past 3 months. So I've been doing pretty good. But they just took it all off Amazon Prime. So I got to figure out how I'm going to watch it now. I guess Hulu has half of them. But yeah, that's what I'm currently going through with my Amazing Race journey.
I find this really relatable content, because I didn't have very many people in my life either who I could talk mm-hmm. about this show with. So I had to just like get a job podcasting about it in order to get
for sure.
Yeah, it's the most communicative way to talk about a show is into a microphone at people in front of a screen, but hopefully people behind the screen as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, listen, we have been beating the drum for years at this point about how The Amazing Race is definitely, I think, the redheaded stepchild of CBS reality compared to Survivor and Big Brother. And look at no further than what Maggie is talking about with its availability, right? Like, it just got removed from Prime, I think, beginning of January, but go to Paramount Plus, right? This flagship streaming service for all things CBS. Back catalog of Survivor, back catalog of Big Brother, season 33 of The Amazing Race.
Why? I simply cannot believe that there is nothing. There's not even season 32 anymore. I watched season 32 live, and that's what I really liked it. And that's what made me intrigued when Big Brother season was over. I was like, oh, I need something else to watch. Why don't I go back and get into The Amazing Race? So, of course, the first place I go is Paramount Plus, and it's only season 32. I was like, this does not make any sense. It has the entirety of the challenge on here. And that's just Viacom. I'm so confused as to why that is.
I'm sure there's somebody could get into the intellectual property law of it, but I bet the reason is actually very boring. So yeah. We just have to be sad about it and never really have it fully explained to us, which I feel like that's a lot of things in life now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's really it's the one of the unseen tasks that we have on legs, right? The mm-hmm. thing of well, it didn't really matter at the end of the day, and it was fairly rote and nothing really exciting happened. So don't worry about it. That is sort of the way I think we're regarding the legalese as to what it is. But Maggie, so talk to me about what seasons you were able to watch before you had, that stuff revoked from you. What were some of your favorite streams that you watched so far? What was it about The Amazing Race that you just found hooked you from that moment you decided to binge it over the past, 4 or 5 months or so?
Okay. So I think that the thing about The Amazing Race that is so interesting that nobody really, I did not expect when I watched, I learned so much about myself while I was watching it because of what would make me angry and what would make me, I would watch it and be how dare this guy be talking to his girlfriend like this on this leg? Season six. I did watch season six, but also I watched Colin and Christy's first season. I watched Robin Amber's first season. And then I watched 14, 15, 16. And I do think I watched 13. Whoever is all of the, whatever team's all of the returning season, the second of those seasons are.
Maggie was in the middle of watching Unfinished Business before the cord got cut. Sure. So she had been watching, I think, all of the post All-Stars. So she's seen 12 through 17, plus yes. I think 5, 6, 7 alongside that.
Mike, I feel like we could call this event where everything suddenly became unavailable. Could we call that the burn?
Listen, we've got a blip, we've got a burn. Let's talk about other cataclysmic events of when things just disappear. Maggie has been in the middle of watching a lot of, I would say Middle Ages Amazing Race mm-hmm. as of late, which I would imagine, we'll talk about it, whether it's night or day compared to what we just watched.
Okay. Also, so when I started getting into it, I was fun. The thing is that I feel like there's just general rules for The Amazing Race. And the number one rule is if you do not have respect for your partner, it's going to be a complete shit show. Sorry, I don't know if I can swear, but that's the only term I can use to describe it. Because it's not about love. It's not about care. It's not about, my child. It's about how much you respect them, a la Ron and Christina. It's his child, but he respected her as -20%. Therefore, he's screaming bloody murder at her on the race. I swear, and I'm not kidding, if I was spoken to in some of the ways that these women in particular are spoken to by their male partners, I would be like, okay, you're going to humiliate me on national television. So I'm going to humiliate you back. And I'm going to say, you can come back to me when you have changed your attitude and I get an apology. And I'm going to sit right here on the ground until you change the way you're talking to me on national television. And I'm not kidding. I said this to my roommate and I was like, I would actually do that. He's like, yes, you're scary. You would actually do that. I can't, it does not matter how intense it is. There is never any excuse, I truly believe, for some of the way that these people behave, especially with their romantic partners. And I think I am so deeply upset by it because, number one, why would you pick your partner if you know they can't run? As someone who can't run, why I would never go on a show like this with an athletic boyfriend who's a marathon runner who's let's do The Amazing Race, because I would be I can't run. I'm not a good runner. You're gonna get upset with me. And number two, especially with romantic partners who then, like, the leg before, they had just been screaming at each other and being so disrespectful, and then they propose, and then I find out later that they're married with children. Like, children, I feel like, is perhaps the most stressful thing a couple could go through. So, like, I would imagine, you're both parents, I would imagine significantly more stressful than The Amazing Race. And if this is the way that you're speaking to each other when you're on The Amazing Race, like, I just think that there's so much, like, it's such a microcosm of, like, relationships and life, and it's fascinating to me. And I thought when I watched Survivor that it was the worst that I could possibly behave on a reality show. I was like, if I was on Survivor, I would be a monster. I would be horrible. No one would want to be around me. I do think I found a show that I would probably behave worse on, and it is The Amazing Race. Like, tired, can't run, exhausted. I get horrible motion sickness. So being in the back reading a map, like, I would be useless. They would be like, please tell me how to turn. And I would be like literally throwing up out the window, be like, I can't look at the map anymore. Like, there's just no reason that anybody should ever want me as a partner. But again, nobody, I would not allow somebody to pick me as a partner, because if I went on, I would be like, you can never yell at me. Like, that's the only rule. Like, you cannot yell at me. Do not raise your voice at me. And I feel very, very strongly about this. I feel like I just talked for 5 minutes about all of my Amazing Race thoughts.
I love
Please
it.
Weigh
no,
in.
I love yeah, it. No, it's great. I mean, I never thought that The Amazing Race would be a way to allow you to hold a globalized mirror up to yourself. But I think you vocalized perfectly how that would be the case, because it allows yourself to put yourself in their shoes in a myriad of ways. One of them being like, how would you interact with somebody when you're not only within their proximity 24 hours a day, but also relying on them in a literal million-dollar game? And unlike Survivor or Big Brother, the intention is that it's not a perfect stranger who's going to stab you in the back. This is someone that you hopefully trust a little bit, who you have to rely on to do, for example, half the roadblocks have to go to this person. It's an interesting trust exercise that, as you talk about time and time again, as good TV as it might make, it can also, unfortunately, make for some dynamics that do not necessarily translate well to future life situations.
Like, very, like, concerning. I mean, look, you see, you know, a snapshot of somebody on television and you're like, who knows? Because, you know, I looked up one of the winners of one of the seasons that I watched too. I don't think I want to name their name, just, you know, but like, they were winners, and they were very calm with each other the whole race. And they were,
I know you're talking about,
like their superpower was their calmness. And then I was like, oh, like, they're clearly still married and have, you know, a beautiful life together, and they are no longer together. So, like, it's clearly not a microcosm. And like, some of these couples that I was like, this is the biggest disaster I've ever seen, are still married. So, like, you know, there is no right or wrong, but I do know one thing, and it's how I will and will not be spoken to on national television. And The Amazing Race is really, really, like, I mean, in the premiere, there was one couple that I was like, careful now, careful, you know, careful. But also, I didn't think that it was crossing the line quite yet. But like, I remember there was the season 14, which is so fun. Season 14, I think, was maybe my favorite season that I watched. And there's a couple at the very beginning who are from, like, Kentucky. And I can't remember their names. But the guy and his, it's like this guy and his wife, and they've, like, never left Kentucky. And he spends the full first leg screaming at her bloody murder, and she's like sobbing by the end of it. But then the second, like, they turn it around, he's crying in the confessional about how he spoke to her, and she's like, I won't hold it against you. And then he's very respectful to her. So, like, I think that there is, like, so, like, obviously the reason that I watch these shows is because of the dynamics between the people. And I think that The Amazing Race is fantastic because it's not a bunch of strangers thrown together. It's these people with, like, very long-standing relationships. Even when they say newly dating, usually they mean, like, a year. So there's, like, these long-standing relationships that you're seeing them navigate and actually, like, sort of, like, have relationship therapy through. And it's very interesting.
I have a question for Mike then, based on all this, because this is something we don't talk a lot about. I feel like you and Rob and I never get into this. So this is fascinating. And I love this conversation we're having. But I feel like, just because of the tonal shift we've had on reality TV as a whole from the time those early seasons were airing, I feel like we get a lot less of this now. I feel like 10 years later, we're not seeing people's relationships implode on TV because we've kind of moved past that as a, you know, as a genre. So I wonder, Maggie, I would love to hear from you later in the season as you are watching the newer seasons. How do you think you're seeing a lot less of that?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, there are certainly times where that comes out. Season 23 is one of the first examples I can think of like a quote unquote modern day Amazing Race season that focuses on that conflict. But that is nearly 10 seasons ago to that point. And there are certainly times where we have seen tension. But I agree. It feels like reality TV has sort of moved on as a whole and maybe society as a whole from a certain circumstance, from like this idea of not trash TV, but like specifically creating content around that Jerry Springerization of it all. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have no problem with never seeing a jock boyfriend scream at his girlfriend who's trying her best ever again. Mm-hmm. Like I never want to see that literally ever again on TV. Like I am interested in the idea of like siblings who are trying to figure out, because like, I actually think, you know, I said like the number one most important thing is that you have to have respect for your partner. So I think siblings are the most interesting partners because you can love your sibling and think your sibling's a moron. You know, and like, I think that there's a ton of tension. Like it can be wrought with tension. Like we saw that last night or this week with the twins, like they like were definitely fighting. And yeah, we didn't get like the big dramatic music or like the extended watch of them like fighting the way that you do, I think sometimes on the old seasons, but like the sibling dynamic is always way more interesting to me than the dating dynamic, because the dating dynamic, I'm just like gross. Awful. I can't watch it.
All right.
It.
Well, it's Maggie, you may want to skip season 26 in your binging then, because that is literally the entire onus of the season is dating couples.
Maybe I will skip that one.
I would say season 26, maybe a bit of season 29 is the last time we really had someone where I was like, the way that this person is treating their partner and the way this person is speaking to their partner is not at all helpful to the conversation. I think I think 26 was honestly the last time we've seen that in a big way.
Yeah, but it's a great point, Jess, as to I don't know if that is, you know, the culture shift prompting a casting shift as well. Right. You know, is it just this idea? Because I know that also 29 was, I think, maybe the ushering in of Jesse Tannenbaum, who has been casting the show ever since. And obviously,
so good.
His brother and Survivor.
So
as well.
Good.
Yeah, so
we
maybe
stand Jesse Tannenbaum in this apartment. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
I'm a Jesse Tannenbaum myself.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a perfect thing. If it hasn't become a thing, it's an official thing now. Make that a t-shirt, people. But I do think it's interesting. Maybe it is this idea of the consciousness less so being about casting, like you said, for that very specific dynamic that has been around since the very beginning. I mean, even back in season one, you know, like Eleni and Karen were dating at the time. And like that was the show's first season, a trope that was well worn by the time it ended up fading out, that maybe it's just that they don't necessarily they're not going for that anymore. And yeah, I'm fine with it as well. It certainly can provide some entertainment, but it is a fine line between that and Jonathan and Victoria. And when it becomes Jonathan and Victoria, it gets incredibly uncomfortable. So I personally am fine with staying away from that. Well, also to Maggie's point, still being able to breed some conflict. I mean, look at this past week's episode where, like you said, Lulu and Lala have their sort of odd mishigash around the ex-boyfriend. Carol and Ray get into it a little bit. Akbar and Sherry obviously have
okay, they're the one.
On.
They're the one that I was like, careful now. Careful now, Akbar. Careful.
Be yellow
careful
card, Akbar,
because
yeah.
I mean, look. I will beat this drum until the end of time. And I know it's probably a situation where they're like, we want you. This is who has to be your partner. But like, then if that's who has to be your partner, that's who your partner is. Don't be trying to, you know, make them be like, why aren't you a marathon runner? Because that's who I am and I'm your partner. Like, I think that is the key actually to success. Like notice how in this week's episode, the flight attendants, like she messed up the cake and immediately the other person was like, oh, it's totally fine. Like, no stress. Let it go. We're going to get back to it, you know? And I think that's because they don't have years and years of deep, deep history and they are friends. And when you are with somebody who you respect and don't feel like you can get away with, you know, kind of taking stuff out on them, You don't take stuff out on them. And I think that that's really so interesting. And I see it a lot with like parents and children too on the seasons. Like, actually the kid will get more mad at the parent than the parent will with their child, except for, you know, the iconic Ron and Christina. My favorite team, the team from Michigan, the father daughter, like he left, he had to go to the bathroom and then he left the fanny pack in the bathroom and she was like yelling at him for it. And he was like, stop, give me a break, you know, because that's that shift where she feels safe, where she can be dad. What the hell are you doing? And he's like, enough. Versus if you're friends and you don't know how the other person would react to you yelling at them, you're less likely to do.
Mm-hmm. So all that being said, Maggie, you watched the premiere. You just mentioned several teams, which both you regarded and maybe did not regard so much in terms of their moments. But what were your overall takes about it? You have been binging a bunch of Amazing Race, and now this is like a taste of the modern day. What was the taste that you ended up developing?
I liked this premiere. I think that the fact that they stayed in London the whole time was like, I thought it was weird. I actually don't like it when they don't, or when they eliminate, rather see everybody make it through the first leg and then get eliminated on the second leg. And I know they can't do that for like purposes of everybody not taking the first leg seriously then if they know nobody's going to get eliminated. But like I would have swapped the elimination. Or like it was just odd that they eliminated someone at the end of the first hour and then not the end of the second hour. But that these teams were all so dynamic and really fun and exciting. And I think that we're going to be in for a good season. I think that the casting's really good.
All right. Well, let's get into some of your feedback that you sent in, and we can sort of distill some of our talk about the first episodes through that as well. And let's start with Natalie, because I'm not going to play the Amazing Race 101 jingle, Jess, but I want to talk about packing for a second. Natalie asked us, maybe last season just traveled really light, but did it feel like these people have a lot bigger bags than normal to you? It seems like one of Dusty slash Ryan brought some sort of foam roller slash yoga mat with them. We got a lot of questions about Ryan's yoga mat, which we will see if it ends up surviving to the end of days. But Jess, talk to me about this this packing situation. Do you agree that there is sort of like an abnormal amount of packing compared to previous seasons? And is there sort of like a commonality amongst Amazing Race fans of how many bags slash what do you pack?
I mean, honestly, all I could see was the foam roller. So I didn't look at anybody else's things they had. But I can understand, like, especially if you have an old sports injury, I can see why you'd want it. I don't understand why you've tucked it under your arm while you're racing. I think you need to have a way to lash that onto your backpack, like get some bungee cords or something. Jeez, man. Which I think he found a place to put it later. But yeah, I think there's a certain number of things that you should and should not bring with you. And I think a lot of that is predicated on like how much do you put into your everyday routine, because you know you're going to be on television, you know that you need to feel comfortable in your own skin. But I would definitely want to take as little stuff as possible, like bring three or four changes of clothes, if that, and bring like the bare minimum of grooming supplies. There are people that bring like a flat iron and a giant case of makeup and all this stuff, a hair dryer. Assume that they're going to put you in a hotel most nights. You can figure out a way around it if they don't. Keep the grooming supplies to a minimum. And then there's a third category of stuff that you bring, which is stuff that is kind of outside of the box. There's people that bring like power bars, for instance, and that can come in handy, but it's safe to assume that you're going to run out at some point and it's going to weigh you down. So I can't think of any like one particular thing. Oh, there's one particular thing that I think I've seen come in handy a couple of times that I think is useful to bring. And that is a calculator. Because I've seen people get into a math task a few times and not have a calculator. And you can use that, like you can use it on metric conversions. You can use it in a lot of ways that are, I think, a little bit, I think it just takes like one thing off your plate. Headlamp, calculator, those are the weird things that you might consider bringing.
Are you team one bag or two bags?
I'm team two bags. We've only ever seen this team one bag thing come into play, I think, on Amazing Race Canada that one time, Mike. We had the team that had two bags and they consolidated to one bag and gave the other bag away to a stranger. And I think you really want your own stuff. You want your own space, especially when you're going to be treated as a single unit with another person. I think psychologically, have your own stuff.
Maggie, is that another checklist for you of my Amazing Race partner, someone I could feasibly share a bag with if need be?
Sure. I think that the bag thing is something that like is so hard to wrap your mind around if you've not done it. Like, it's something that really doesn't. Think because like I never think about that. But there's been tasks that I've watched where people have just like, you know, basically worn themselves ragged on the intense, you know, physical task that they had to do for the race. My partner to please carry their bag for them while they do the next little bit. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so something that I would have a hard time thinking about. And I remember watching when Jess and Cody were on the race, she did like a what was in our bag type situation. Mm-hmm. And she said that they brought like a huge package of underwear so that they could just throw away their underwear. And by the end, like it would like dwindle down their supply. And so there would be like less in their bag by the end of the race, which I thought was super interesting, like a very interesting strategy. She was like, we just got these like really lightweight pairs of underwear from Amazon and we would put them in bags. And then when we were done, we would like throw them out at the end of the night. And I was like, maybe that's like a way of you to, you know, like keep your bags lighter by the end of the race when it's more important that you can outrun people. But I'm with
if
you.
Only we didn't have those two extra pairs of underwear, we could have won $1 million.
But Jess, I totally agree with you about the like grooming products, but I do think that there would be like a big, you know, concern in my head that like I will be on national television and like this will be, if you ever Google my name for the rest of my life, like these are the photos of me that you will see. So I do think I would bring like a mascara wand, you know, like a single mascara wand and some concealer and some sunscreen for sure. But like that would be probably it, because by the end of these legs, I mean, the way that some of these people roll up to fill is hilarious. And you know, what can you do? No flat iron is going to fix that. You know, after you've thrown yourself into a pit of mud and then you have to go to fill and be like, hey, you know.
Definitely. That's when you use the disposable underwear to like wipe your hair down of all the mud.
Exactly.
And you'd be able to throw it away. Maybe that's the use for it. I've never heard of that before. I guess I forgot to check out that video because I did not think about the idea of this. I know that just the laundry situation can be sort of sketchy, right?
So maybe
that was also one of the uses for it.
Yeah, everybody is doing their laundry in hotel sinks, basically. Like they don't take your clothes away and bring them back folded or anything like that. So that's also, I mean, there's a lot of websites like TravelSmith and whatnot where you can buy stuff that you can wash in a hotel sink that will dry overnight. I always think it's funny when people show up on The Amazing Race wearing jeans because like I immediately pick out those people. I mean, those people are out first.
I'm watching the Cowboys.
On The Amazing Race. Yeah.
I'm in the middle of watching the Cowboys with their hats and their buckles and their jeans.
Yes. And they
what
do
they doing?
Like, I don't want to spoil it for you, but yeah.
And they wear the lunch lady things on their hats, on their cowboy hats, so they don't tactical can you be. But you know, to each their own. They're iconic. We're talking about them now.
Yeah, they're committed to the bit for sure. I think
very.
If your whole, like the reason you were cast is predicated on a particular thing that you're wearing, that's going to be a problem. I understand that, you know, you're going to be the whatevers and you want to represent that. But it's also, I think if I were going in the Amazing Race, I would cling as hard as I could to active wear that is breathable and dries easily. Like that's what you want. You want one of those little down jackets, which I saw like Sam and Connie had these, the ones that pack into a little pillow that's about the size of a football. That's an important thing that you're going to want to have. And if your identity as the team is not going to allow for that, I think you're going to have a problem.
Yeah. So let this be a warning. Leather daddies out there, do not go on to the Amazing Race.
Leather daddies need not apply.
Exactly. Otherwise, like it's once it gets wet, you're going to have a big problem.
The chafing, Mike. The chafing.
It's going to be bad.
Or at least find a you know, vegan substitute that will hold up better under rain. I think I'm not going to dissuade the Leather Daddy community from applying, but just know that you need to be prepared if you do get cast.
Well, as Maggie mentioned, and as Jess and I sort of affirmed on our recap with Rob, the tests were I would not say the brightest thing in the episode. I know we had a couple of comments of this. I know Sam wrote in, thought that maybe the weather had sort of forced them to switch gears at the last minute, specifically the second leg where like everything seemed indoors. I know we'll certainly get into this. Kim and Penn have a podcast, KPHAP, where they are doing Amazing Race stuff every week. And they said there was actually an unseen task that had to change because of the weather. So we'll certainly get into that. And maybe that was the case. But with regards to the mail rail, I want to take a question here from Jared, who says, is it possible that originally in the mail rail task, the clue was inside one of the packages, but then someone thought, you know, it's probably not a great idea to have it look like the teams are opening undelivered mail, so they threw it in the bottom of the bin instead? What do you think, Jess? Do you think they did a last-minute pivot when they realized that, yeah, maybe having a bunch of Americans go through British people's mail is not a great image?
Well, you know, Mike, I don't know if this plays into it or not, but we talked about it a little bit in the recap podcast where 15 years ago, which, yeah, that was 15 years ago. I am shocked as well. On Amazing Race 11, there was a task that was exactly like this one, but like 25 times harder. And you did have to pick through a big pile of mail and open letters and what have you. And they didn't seem to have a problem with it then. So I think everybody just has to assume that this is prop mail. At a certain point, I don't think it's an issue that we're seeing people open mail like that. But also the task didn't ask you to open it. So the task just asked you to find it and then you can open it later. In fact, they don't want you to open it. Like there's very specific rules when it comes to Amazing Race clues about where you open it, how you open it, what you do with it. And I have to imagine that the specific instructions on the task were like, don't open it. Not that that stopped anybody, but you know, you're not supposed to open it. So I don't think they're worried about the optics of that is my short answer to that.
You don't think that they're necessarily thinking about like, well, people look at the illegality of these tasks and think, oh man, what are these Americans doing?
Yeah, I think there are far worse things people have done on The Amazing Race that have upset people in a totally different way where they're like questioning the legality or the appropriateness of it. And I think this falls very low on that chart.
I do find it interesting that, like you said, you know, I do wonder if the teams had come back to this task or done this task at the end of the season versus the beginning of the season, I wonder if things would have been different. Because like you said, I think there was still a lot of like early season jitters happening, right? Where like Anthony, like you said, like starts ripping open packages like it's Christmas morning and everyone else started doing it as well. Whereas I do wonder if it's later in the season and people realize, okay, these are what tasks are. Maybe it won't necessarily, you know, be something that they would normally do. Maggie, give me your thoughts on this mail rail task. How does this stack for you in terms of the lame quotient of the task that we experienced over the premiere?
Well, I think it would have been like way lamer if they hadn't screwed it up so bad. And then it gave it like intrigue and was like very fun. Yeah, I mean, it was fine. I don't know. Like, it seemed like they were just like lifted it up and it was immediately there. And I wanted them to like do more digging or, you know, maybe they should have just made a gigantic pile, you know, and like, so it, there were, you know, 8 clues or however many, 10 clues dispersed throughout the gigantic pile, versus like individual, you know, bins that all you had to do is go through that one bin and you knew it was going to be in there eventually. And there's like a limited number of pieces of mail in there. So you're going to find it, you know, rather quickly versus if it's a huge pile, you could be going searching through the exact same mail that somebody else already searched through. And you know what I mean?
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. Let's go back to the beginning of the episode because we have a question from John in DC who basically asks, how did they do the sort of at home start to The Amazing Race 33. Because the interesting thing is, obviously, there is preseason promos that are done, right? Everyone got their photos taken. They look beautiful in those preseason photos. There's also the intro packages that we saw throughout this episode that are done seemingly from the same location, probably where the pictures are done. So just feel free to stop and correct me if I'm wrong here. But I'm fairly sure the process is, like, once the 11 teams were confirmed, they flew to LA to do, like, all their marketing stuff. Then they got flown back home and said, like, I don't know, a few days from now or so-and-so is when the race will begin. You know, be prepared for this message from Phil on your Amazing Race branded phone or something.
Honestly, no, I don't think that's what happened.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, I disagree. And I feel free, listeners, to correct me on this. But what I think probably happened is I think they did all the establishing shots in their homes. And then they staged the now the Amazing Race starts. Everybody then flies to LA and then everybody flies to London together. That's what I think happened.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I guess a little bit pulling back the curtain, right? So it's a false start almost in that regard. Yeah. Like, all right, now it's time to go.
Yeah, they're definitely pretending there.
Yeah, because I think that would make sense if you have to bring everyone in on the same flight. Otherwise, it has to be a monster to confirm four different airports with four flights that also get into London at the exact same time.
Yeah, this is like, not to mention it's extra flights that you're paying for. Like, if you think about it from a budget standpoint, they're really trying to slim down.
Yeah, Maggie, what did you think about that? You know, I evoked the Big Brother comparison, right? With like, oh my God, I was just picking up dog poop and I saw my key. Oh, I have 30 minutes to pack. Did you get that feeling when you were watching everyone get the message from Phil and say goodbye to their families?
For sure. And also, I thought it was so sad because, like, it's so fun at the beginning of the season to watch Phil say, like, on your mark, get set, go, when everybody sprints and then sometimes people fall and then they can't get into their cars. Like, I was, like, really missing that part of it. I thought that, like, something was lost by doing it this way, especially because it was filmed pre-pandemic. Obviously, if it was the pandemic, you got to do what you got to do. But like, it's filmed pre-pandemic. I can't believe that they got rid of the actual starting line. Do you think it's because Phil was busy and like couldn't make it, you know, to the original starting line?
That's a good question. Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, where does this fall in the timeline of filming Tough as Nails? I'm pretty sure they had already filmed season two by the time, or no, filmed season one, because I don't think they had been picked up for season two by the time this filmed. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure, because I think another opportunity that they missed out on, we saw this in season 32, right, where like Phil got to sort of have teams jazz each other up and talk a little bit about what they do. I remember this back in season 30 as well. And given, I think, the magnanimity of some of the people on this cast, it could have been an interesting opportunity to have them do this rather than sort of like what seems some pre-scripted, hey, other team, what did you do? What do you do for a living? Or some sort of accomplishment, medal award-winning service that you did to bring you on The Amazing Race right now.
Yeah, I definitely, that felt so stagey to me. I would rather hear what they're saying behind closed doors about each other.
Yeah, so here's a question from Blair Sanders, who noticed something interesting. Blair said that Caro had a confessional by herself when she was talking about Ray. Normally, confessionals are done by team. Should we raise our eyebrows, or is this a normal thing to have a contestant have a confessional by themselves? Now, we'll go to Jess for sort of like the is this normal question. But Maggie, what was your take on just all of a sudden cutting to Caro on a bench by herself? You know, Forrest Gump got on the bus and now she's left alone with this box of chocolate talking about Ray.
So I remember when Brittany Haynes went on the show, I listened to an interview where she said that she was like, Janelle, if we do one thing, it's that we will never fight enough that they have us do confessionals separately. She's like, because you always know a team's in a bad place when they're doing separate confessionals. And I started to really look for that on my rewatch. And sometimes that's not the case. Sometimes just like something really iconic happens for one person on the race. Like when that girl got hit in the face with the watermelon, she did a ton of confessionals by herself. But like, I think that is very indicative maybe to the state of their relationship, to where they are relationally, that they wanted her to be able to speak freely about him without him breathing down her neck. Like, I do think that there is maybe something to that, perhaps.
Yeah, I would by that. And I know they've also done the thing with the shady confessional where you see someone and you think they're talking by themselves and then the camera zooms out and their partner is sitting right there. That's that's another subset of these that I enjoy.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting. I feel like it's very rare, especially in modern day Amazing Race, again, like we said, where it seems like the conflict has not reached that huge boiling point that it necessitates Carol being like, all right, I think I'm going to get a solo one here. So, Ray, if you want to take a lap, let's talk for real about this clue thing.
Yeah, it didn't feel to me like we'd reached that point yet. It was a little strange, but it's also, I don't want to spoil anything for anyone. So I have ideas, I have thoughts about this, but I don't want to get into them because I'm about to fall over in my chair.
Is it slippery out there like the sidewalks in London? Are you ready to fall like Penn unfortunately did?
Yeah, I'm about to do that. No, this is just not my desk chair, so I'm a little bit uncomfortable. But
so a couple of production things that I wanted to point out. This is from Martin in from Germany. So we spoke about like the cake decorating task as well of, okay, could was there another answer to this besides France and Germany, or was that just like the easiest path to take? And according to Martin, there was only one answer or two answers, maybe it seems to this. It was the flags, just to recap what we had Colombia, Brazil, Germany, Thailand, Chile, Norway, South Africa, France, Jamaica, the UK, Sierra Leone, and Russia. Correct me if I'm wrong, Jess. It seems like it was France and Germany then the only correct answer, if that was the case?
Yeah, seems like it. If that's the list, that's correct.
Interesting. So, I mean, I guess in that case, this is sort of the, obviously it was the more complicated detour option just because of the darts as well. But I find it interesting that this was one of those cases where you thought on paper, oh, there are so many answers, but there was really only one correct one. Maggie, how are you on flags? Were you along with Raquel and Caleb, like, what's Brexit? Or were you more so on the side of, aha, look at these dumb idiots trying to put the Union Jack on a cake when they're so out of their league?
Well, I always, like, pick the wrong one. I feel like whenever I'm watching, I'm like, they give the two detour options, and I'm like, that's the one I would pick. And then that turns out to be, like, the horrible one. Like, both times, I was like, I would for sure do the art. And then I was like, I would for sure do the cake because Again, just my skill set, the exact opposite of what you need for the Amazing Race. Terrible hand-eye coordination. So I was like, darts, I could never get it. Like, I couldn't. And then I watched them, and I was like, actually, I probably could have gotten that. But the flag thing, no. I was like, yeah, the UK and France, that's great. Like, good for them. They got it right. And then when they said Brexit, I literally was sitting on my couch, and I was like, I forgot. Like, I would have completely got that wrong. Like, am I stupid? Like, I forgot that that happened. But yeah, I was also like the flight attendants, you know, just, I mean, listen, clueless.
You're in good company. They're a strong team at least. So listen, maybe, maybe they won't win a geography bee anytime soon. Mm-hmm. Just to bring up a point of what you brought up during the recap in the secret seats, I did find it interesting that Penn and Kim, who were, again, well-studied in flags, end up decorating the Jamaican flag, not because they think somehow Jamaica just moved over to Europe, but because they didn't realize that it was supposed to be in the EU. So again, read your clue is a tantamount rule here in so many ways.
Yeah. So, Mike, I want to put on a tinfoil hat for a second.
Oh, please. Yes.
I want to, and this is just kind of like, we're going to go into the sliding doors universe of what might have been had we not had the blip.
And okay.
These flags of these countries, do these flags of these countries include the intended route?
I think there's a couple of crossovers. So I know that when Bertram Van Munster had sort of said the, you know, shut it down of it all moment, he was in northern Sweden because I believe leg four, which was after Scotland, was supposed to go to the Arctic Circle. So I know he was there. I believe there were rumors about them going to northern Italy, which obviously, given the situation, was canned incredibly quickly. Bertram had told me in my interview with him that they'd also had plans to go to Nepal and to Thailand. So Thailand is on there, but I don't see Sweden or Nepal or anything like that. Maybe they would have gone to Norway instead of Sweden. I love that theory, Jess, because that's an interesting route. If we have, you know, Colombia, Brazil, Germany, Thailand, Chile, Norway, South Africa, France, like Sierra Leone, Russia. I feel like it's been a long time since we've been in Russia. That'd be a really fun route, you know, all things considered.
Yeah, I mean, it's way more countries than you can fit into an Amazing Race, but I could definitely see them. These include a lot of countries that they go to a lot. So that would be really fun if you then, at the end of the race, you had to somehow do a task with those exact same flags. It would be a really interesting way to come full circle.
Let me also ask about something that I noticed and was asked to me a couple times. The lower thirds. I know that these occasionally change. Did either of you notice the new lower thirds, like confessional Chiron style that we got for this season of the race?
No, what are they? Yeah.
So, well, maybe we'll put a pin in this and address it in future Tar Pit podcasts. But I encourage people to look out for it. It's like now a black and yellow sort of style along the bottom. Exactly. I do believe, actually, I think it was one of Dusty or Ryan did do a red and yellow.
Yeah, I heard that. It was awesome.
I'm very surprised no one's done that yet, or if maybe they cut it for music rights purposes.
Probably that.
All right. Well, speaking of production stuff, actually, that segues perfectly into what I want to do next on this podcast, because look, I would call this the Amazing Race equivalent of the slop, which is Rob Cesternino's sort of odds and ends part of Big Brother. A tradition he likes to take part in there is breaking down the opening credits of Big Brother, where people do ridiculous poses in front of CGI waves crashing around them, given what can only be described as ubiquitous direction as to what they're sort of supposed to be doing. It's almost equivalent to like the clothes they're supposed to wear of, okay, this is your type, so do the thing your type does. Let's talk about the Amazing Race version. You know, let's tread into some untreaded waters and see exactly what we're getting here. So what I have up, and for people who are watching the video version, you can see this as well. But if not, you can sort of like, we'll recap it as we're going along here, is the Amazing Race Season 33 official intro. Now, before even we get into this, I want to ask Maggie, because Maggie, you have been watching seasons from a different credit style of the Amazing Race, what old school fans refer to as like the ominous head turn era.
There's a lot of this that would go on.
And they would go back to back.
They time it so they're doing it at the same time, which is very disconcerting.
Yeah, so yes. For those that haven't watched old Amazing Race scenes, it almost became memetic within the Amazing Race fan community that every single credit sequence would be of a team doing some sort of like B-roll activity, like playing soccer or shooting pool, and then it would cut to a static shot of the two of them standing, and to Maggie's point, maybe they're back-to-back, maybe they're in a pose, but they always turn towards the camera. You just happened to catch us, candidly, embracing our relationship, whatever that may be. And that has been something that's been there from the very beginning until now. They've just done these sort of like, hey, come to a soundstage and do it in front of a green screen things.
Yeah, and they're always doing activities that they never would have done in real life. Like, I think that was the thing that I've heard a lot of past contestants say, like, I've never been roller skating in my entire life, and why did they make us roller skate sort of thing?
Maggie, if we're in your worst case scenario and you're on the Amazing Race, could you imagine what they'd make you and your partner do?
Well, I don't, this is the problem. I don't even know who I would pick to be my partner. Like, it would be a very difficult, like, I don't know if I would want to burn bright and be like an iconic forever Amazing Race team that, like, you know, it's fireworks, but I'm gone immediately, you know, or if I would like to like actually try and like win, you know, it would be very, very difficult. I think like if I'm trying to like be iconic, I pick my mom and I think we like hug, you know, but if I'm trying to
imagine
win,
hugging and then turning your head, that has to be the most awkward motion ever.
If I pick like my older brother, I think we like pretend to like punch each other, you know, because we're like siblings, like playing fighting, you know. Well, you know what I mean? Like how they're like, oh, we're like siblings, and we like, you know, fight, like, you know,
no. Yeah, but I love you anyway. Yeah,
yeah,
I
know.
Yeah, and then you're like punching, and then you're like, yeah, back to back folded arms.
You know, it just reminds me of like, remember those static shots where they usually open old episodes of Family Feud, right? Where like the placard would come up, and they'd be like, brothers would be arm wrestling and mom and dad would be like playing the piano or something before they end up coming on down.
Yeah.
And grandma shaking her finger.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's the Amazing Race version.
Or like those lower thirds that they used to use to promote other shows when you come back from commercial.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, exactly. We're like, again, William Fichtner and the promoter would pop up a spot and be like, watch my show. All right, so here's what we're going to do. I think we're going to watch some of the shots from these teams and see, does it work for them given what they know? You know, how do we rate the sort of natural stances in front of the camera? So let's see. I've slowed this down to quarter speed so that we can really get a good look at things.
Thank you, Abraham Zapruder.
Yeah, exactly. So we can really see what the magic bullet is coming in. Though there will be some projectiles as we're about to get into it. So here comes the Amazing Race logo, as bright and beautiful as ever. And here we go. All right, so we're flashing. There's a plane. There's London, which they actually did go to. A ship, which they'll probably not be on. A street that they probably won't be going to.
A dam that they're not going to jump off of.
All right, so here's our first run.
Yay!
Arun and Natalia. Okay, so let's stop it right here. So Arun and Natalia, so it looked like what? They like fist bumped into a sort of handshake into him putting his arm around her. Am I typifying that correctly?
Yeah.
Yeah, looks right. I love them so much. They're my favorite team. I'm from Detroit. I'm from Metro Detroit. They're father, daughter. Love them. I'm rooting for them. Detroit versus everybody. I am a part of the Detroit. And we're versus everybody. So I love them. I really, really hope they win. They're my winner pick team.
There you go. First place in the intro and in Maggie's heart as well.
Absolutely.
Representing Detroit. Jess, was this a good natural thing for Arun and Natalia? The weird little hand signs they engage in before looking at the camera.
It looked a bit like they weren't sure. Like it felt like he was coming in for the handshake. She was coming in for the fist bump. It's a little bit like, you know, when you'd go in for the high five and you do a turkey instead.
Yes, very, very much so. And we'll talk later about maybe some of those awkward turkey or the awkward turtle moments that Arun and Natalia get involved in later.
But look at how cute their ending little poses with them smiling with their arms around each other. They look so happy and excited to be there. They look great.
Yeah, they turned it around. Like this feels very natural. The first part did not, though.
Sure.
All right. Well, not how you start, it's how you finish. All right, let's see what's coming next.
Switzerland. Driving on a street.
Okay, here we go. Taylor and Isaiah. All right, so could you tell these guys are famous for a dancing video? They make weird finger gun, almost like, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Elaine dancing on Seinfeld. It reminds me of the Little Kicks, Jess.
That's harsh, man. It looked to me like one of those Canadian teen dramas. Like they look like they're in the opening credits to Degrassi.
Maggie, what are you making of this?
Yeah, well, I think that the way that they have portrayed Taylor and Isaiah on the show up to this point is so weird. Like, they've never said that they were married until like an hour and 15 minutes into the show. Like, it's like so weird. Like, you thought that they were like brothers or best friends or something. Like, it's so odd that they weren't like, we are married and we got... Like, that should have been their very first, you know, like, thing. Like, we got married.
It's weird that their chyron is YouTube sensations and not married.
Yeah. Like, or it could be married YouTube sensations. Like, because the thing that they got famous for was something at their wedding.
People would misread and say, like, oh, wait, did they marry YouTube sensations? And this is like they left their YouTube sensations behind to go take care of the house.
I mean, I don't know. But, like, I just thought it was so... odd the way that they represented them, because I'm sitting next to my roommate and my friend who are like gay men, and I was like, yeah, they're married, and they were like, they are? Like, well, obviously we have to root for them, but like I couldn't even tell that they were married, because at the beginning they were just like, hey, like doing the way that they just, yeah, like they're doing weird finger guns, and then they like are very like stale putting their arms around each other versus like, you know, in like a loving, like married way. And I don't think that it's Taylor and Isaiah's fault. I think it's just the way that the show has like oddly presented them. I don't know.
Yeah, and we didn't see a lot of them in the first hour. I kept like forgetting that's the team where I was like, oh, that's the team we haven't seen yet. So I think maybe like what they did in the first hour seemed a little bit less consequential to the story they were trying to tell, but still, like, give them, you know, throw them a bone. Like, first time you show them, at least, like, mention that's what their dynamic is.
All right. Well, let's move on here from the finger guns. We have some little greenhouses. All right. Connie and Sam. So she is making what appears to be a muscle, and he is pointing at, like, check out the guns on my wife.
But it looks like she's, like, doing a half thumbs up.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Is she supposed to, this is bad to say. Is she supposed to be making a muscle? Because I don't see it.
She's not really flexing.
She is. But yeah, it's like sort of like a, hey, like, it looks like she might be like, you know, what is it? Hitchhiking a little.
Yeah. Good. Check out my wife's thumb.
Yeah.
Yeah. And listen, all the power to people that are into that. But like at the same time, I don't know if Sam wants to, I don't know, advertise his wife's only thumbs or anything like that.
Hey. You know, you got to do what you got to do when you got your time on TV.
Exactly. I just find it so odd that she's making a muscle. He's like, check it out, everybody.
Whatever.
All right, let's keep going here.
Trafalgar Square. Oh. Random person dressed like a Greek god.
Wait, I want to go back and look at her. Who is this?
I mean, I believe this looks like Greece a woman is on the menu, but this looks
like a woman in a photo shoot during America's Next Top Model.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It looks like Mr. J would be behind the camera, like eyes, give more eyes, give more angles, like, and she's like in this makeup and sitting in a like a gold chair.
Yeah, Julia, so, you tried to be a goddess. But today, I'm an atheist. I'm sorry, you're not in the running to be America's Next Top Model. Where did she come from?
You know?
Like, they could show the Parthenon.
Budget cuts. Yeah, like, budget cuts.
This has to be more expensive than stock footage. I'm sorry.
This looks like an extra from Xanadu. I'm so confused by this. Like, look at the hair.
I wonder if she's like a part of the clue on one of the legs. Like you go to her to get the clue or something.
100%. I think that's why she's here, but it's still a strange choice for the
opening.
Yeah,
it's an odd thing to just include her, but I guess we'll see her later. All right. Anthony and Spencer. Real basic bitch pose from Anthony and Spencer here. Hands on hips,
very,
and arms folded.
Very big brothery. The classic arm fold, hand on hip. Very much. That would be straight guy number one and straight guy number two on Big Brother. That's usually their poses that they're given. And I think that's what we get from Anthony and Spencer here.
Yep. Jess, any further comments about this?
Yep. Boring team that wins all the legs energy.
Yep, exactly. We should have seen it just through the intro. More interesting is the person who came before them. All right. Let's see who's coming up next. Okay. Raquel and Kayla. So it looks like they are fussing with their purple ascots, which are not ascots, but seemingly just bandanas tied around their necks. And then they're doing the MKNA back-to-back thing. Maggie, what are you thinking about this?
I mean, it's like, we are flight attendants. We wear ascots, you know, very classic, very, like I said, back-to-back. I knew my brand. If I'm in a girl-girl team, we are definitely going back-to-back, smiling. You know, it's just the way that they always have these girls racing.
Yeah, just what do you think about this?
I mean, this is kind of a shout out to the old school Amazing Race poses, I think. Like the back to back, we got a lot more of that in the early days. So I want to believe that this is a shout out to like the retro era.
I just feel bad that they couldn't afford proper ascots. Again, like look at Kayla is just wearing a straight up bandana around her neck.
But Mike, you're not packing an ascot for the Amazing Race, but you might pack a bandana.
Is there not like a dress up box that they have on set that they could pull things out of?
There is no tickle trunk for the Amazing Race, Mike.
If I could construct a Digi Bloom costume in 5 minutes, they could have gotten an ascot. That's all I'm saying, CBS.
I'm saying they're improvising based on the tickle trunk that they had.
I would like them to follow in the footsteps of another iconic all-female Amazing Race team who wore insane costumes during all the legs. You know, the team with the woman who got hit in the face with the watermelon.
Rick and Claire, yep.
Yeah, Brooke and Claire, like they always had a feather in their hair or bobby socks or something. You know, they always had something going on that was like fun. And I want Raquel and Kayla to follow in their iconic footsteps because they were awesome.
Yeah, I wanted them to have a little bit of like the Pan Am style, like, you know, airline flight attendant hats, right? Even though they're never going to wear them on the race. Or maybe just put them on the Easter Island heads over here just as like a nice effect.
Sure. Or Mike, someday Google image search Braniff Airlines. We could go there if we're going to do flight attendant costumes.
There we go. All right. So let's keep going. Helen, Kayla, back, pulling off old school poses. We got a fountain. All right. Michael and Mo.
What is going on here?
Okay. So what's going on here is that they're really playing up the fact that Mike is 3 feet taller than Mo, and he's holding him out as though he's a little brother with his arm, and Mo's trying to punch him like a cartoon character.
That's the thing, this feels like the intros for like The Amazing Race 1932, not The Amazing Race 2021. Yes.
And then, so he's trying to punch him, and then they're like, we're just kidding. We're actually friends. We don't want to punch each other. And then they give the thumbs up and the arm around the shoulder.
Yeah, Mo in particular is doing like the Fonzie thumbs up, though, which is the thumbs up but pointed outwards for whatever reason. Actually, Connie, I guess, gives a similar thumbs up if we're going by that logic. So he sort of is doing it's a living. I'm always going to get pushed down by this guy.
It's like, he didn't actually hurt me. I'm all good.
Don't worry, I'm safe. There's no brain damage here. Yeah, but it's interesting. Yeah. I don't know. You're tall and you're short. Push against his head for half of your time while doing an intro.
For comedic effect.
Yeah, it really. I mean, when Phil talked to me about them, he described them as like a Laurel and Hardy dynamic. I didn't get that from their time on the race necessarily. I guess I got it in this intro shot. That's the thing, is this is probably their most outstanding moment besides their singing is poor Mo being sort of pushed down and away from Michael by his ginormous arms and hands.
All right, did we ever learn how tall either one of these guys really is?
So I know that Michael, I think, is at least 6 foot. Because I think there was also something about him like playing basketball. He was like Winston from New Girl and Aris Bushkauskas. He played basketball in one of those Eastern European countries. So he has to be fairly tall. Mo, I guess by eyeballing, it has to be at least like 5 foot something, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what I would guess. It's too bad they're not sticking around because I'd love to call them Team Car 54. Where are you? Which nobody's going to get because all those people that watch that show are dead.
No, well, Phil's going to tell everyone to kick some ass if you did get that reference. Okay.
Yep.
Lulu and Lala, we've got to talk about this. I'm going to replay this one more time. So I think it's
a clone reveal.
There's two of them. And they look the same. Wow.
Shades of Big Brother 5.
Yeah, so I mean, listen, we had a twins a few seasons ago, but obviously Lulu and Lala, I think, safe to say, had more personality.
We had
than Eric
twins
and Dan.
Last season. We had twins last season. You said that the those two blonde
they're
girls
not twins.
Were terrible.
They're not sisters. Twins.
What? They're not twins?
Yeah, they're sisters.
Oh my gosh! They are identical.
2 year age difference, as I recall.
Wow. Okay. I was like, when I was listening to the podcast from earlier in the week, I was like, Mike, you're wrong. Those girls who lost all the time were twins. But wow, I had no idea. Throwback. Sorry, guys.
No. Well, here are the twins proper, though. Maybe from your logic, Haley and Kaylin could have done the exact same thing last season. What do you think, Jess, about the twin twist reveal, as it were?
I'm always here for a good twin twist reveal.
Yeah, I'm surprised Holly didn't step out from Big Brother 5 just to throw it back to other cowboys from reality TV. I don't know, I'm sort of obsessed with this, Maggie, this idea of one of them standing. It's like, but wait, you thought I was just racing by myself? No, there's someone else, and she looks just like me.
Get ready. Double trouble. We are exactly the same except for a vowel.
Yeah, exactly. Change one vowel, do a find and replace on U to A. You've got us both pegged.
Lord.
But we'll find out later that maybe this actually is a bit sanctimonious or sacrilegious to who they are. All right, we've got a nice little Italian city. Okay, so Ryan and Dusty, it looks like we actually, I don't know, it seems to me like we picked up their pose in the middle of it. Like, it seemed like we were hugging in the middle when we start the thing off.
No, Mike, they were not hugging, okay? They were handshake into quick bump hug. They were not full hugging. These guys are, you know, they're macho guys. They would never hug for the intro. Like, I just think it's, like, so silly that, like, they're doing... They have like one arm in and they're like, you know, tapping each other on the back basically as they come out of it. Like, why not just have them actually hug? Like, give them the real hug. They love each other. They said it in their package. Let them hug.
Yeah. You just know? What did you think about this? About starting with the hug into the arms folded pose?
It seems to me like they had them hug, and then in editing, the editors were like, no, this is like an entire fifth of a second longer than we need. We need to cut that and show it like in medias res.
Yeah, we need 1/5 of a second more of Michael pushing against Mo's head. So sorry, Ryan and Dusty, you're getting the short end of the stick here.
Exactly. Yeah, this is an exact science.
All right, so we get out of the hug. We get some beautiful buildings and lots of fast people moving around. Okay, Caro and Ray. So I think true to maybe what their airtime is, it's Caro front and center, mussing her hair. Ray is just gawking. And then he eventually steps in to put his arm behind her.
Yeah, and his face on her hair.
Yeah, exactly. Maggie, what do you make of this? Is this, much like you talked about, infirmly, you know, psychologically breaking down relationships, is this a microcosm of Caro and Ray on the race as well?
Well, I don't know. I like how, like, loving he's seeming. Like, he's got his hand on her, like, lower waist, like, which shows that they are, like, clearly close enough to feel comfortable touching like that in, like, you know, this sort of capacity. But, I mean, like, Caro is clearly, like, the one carrying the team here for, through these first two episodes. Like, it's Caro's team and Ray's just living in it, you know?
And just this feels though stereotypical Amazing Race, right? We always sort of have this team where it's one standout personality and their friend who just happens to come along.
Oh, for sure. That's kind of how most Amazing Race teams function. Like, I, you know, I like the senior prom portrait of it all, but what is Ray doing with his other arm? It feels like he doesn't know what to do with it.
We need Bryce Isaiah to analyze the hand. I don't know. Do his Adidas shorts, because I see the logo there. Do they have pockets? Could he not put his hand in his pocket?
Could he not put his other arm, like, go full senior prom?
Yes, that's what he should have done, Jess. That's what I would have directed him to do. But, you know, nothing is more awkward. Like, I get really uncomfortable having to take photos like this, or like do some, like, if I had to do like a twirl for the camera or something, I would be so uncomfortable the whole time. So I completely get it. Like, you got dead arm, but like, what can you do? You know, you're trying.
All right, well, let's move on from Ray's dead arm here. Not that in the game, though. All right. So we have a busy, crowded street. Akbar and Sherry, and watch out. Here comes the apple. Akbar
is throwing it.
He throws an apple at us. I don't know how to feel about this. I feel attacked.
So they did have a prop box, is what we're saying.
I mean, unless Akbar has a loose apple he brings with him on all occasions, I'm assuming so.
Like, teachers, I guess because they're educators, you know, but weird.
I mean, just your child is in school. Is are apples a thing of the past for teachers? Were they ever a thing to begin with?
I mean, I think in like the 1950s, probably they were a thing. But yeah, right now, like, you know, my child goes to a school where all of the lunches are provided. So it's like, if you want an apple, you just go to the cafeteria and you get one. It's not like a prized.
So it's not even like, if you want to be a teacher's pet, you have to bring like actually something coveted rather than something they could easily get themselves.
I think in the modern era, the teacher would prefer a Starbucks gift card.
Or an Apple product, perhaps.
Oh, there you go. But please do not throw an iPhone at the camera. I feel like that's irresponsible.
That'd be a mixed message if Akbar hucked a phone at us, Maggie.
Yeah, I think that maybe like this is, but like they could have just, you know, like stood outward and then like come together and giggled for the camera. Like, they have such lovely smiles and like beautiful energy that like they didn't need to throw the apple. They could have just like moved in and smiled. I feel that would have sufficed. No,
I mean, it's also his program is, you know, you can come to hang out at the school after hours. But I feel like the message is, come just hang out at school after hours and I'll throw things at you. This seems like it's kind of diluting the message.
Could Akbar be a Ron Clark type of like really engaging the students in different ways, right? Instead of standing on desk, he's throwing fruit at them.
I assume that's what's going on here. He's definitely a Ron Clark type.
And that brings it all the way back to Brooke and Claire, right? Like she was the pioneer of the motion, getting hit in the face with the someone needs to Photoshop Akbar tossing the apple and Claire getting hit in the face with the watermelon.
Oh my God, like please do it. Please, guys. I beg of you. I need it.
Let's keep going here. We get a nice waterfall into a canyon.
That's
another roundabout. And I think this is our last one. Kim and Penn and final pose of a musical number is what I'm getting vibe. I'm getting vibes of like Oklahoma. Yow. That sort of like punch at the end of a big 11 o'clock number.
I mean, knowing these two and like knowing their vibe on their YouTube videos, I feel like the next frame of this should have him dropping her.
Just like, oh boy, whoops, sorry. Maggie, what do you make of this? Is it like typical Kim and Penn? I mean, it does scream quirky to me.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't know how else to describe Kim and Penn other than like the BuzzFeed couple. Like, that's just like the way that I view them. Like, they are just like BuzzFeed. And I feel like this is very, actually, I'm going to be honest. Watching the secret scenes with them made me like them a lot more because I was like, oh, they are actually like real people. Like, and they aren't just like this like quirky bunch that you see on the screen, you know, like they like can actually like have a normal conversation with Phil. And like, you know, I am very interested in that.
As opposed to what this sort of evokes, I'm assuming.
Yes. You know, like, I mean, I think that it's perfect for The Amazing Race for television. Like they know how to perform clearly, but it just gives me like very like 2013 BuzzFeed, like they're coming in hot. I mean, I think that's just sort of like what we're going to see from them on the show, which is really fun. You know, I did those quizzes like everybody else. You know,
you won't believe the 10 different poses Amazing Race couples do. Number 6 will blow your mind.
No, but for real, doesn't that sound like a YouTube video that they would make? Like the 10 different types of Amazing Race poses.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that it's cute. It's cute. They very clearly are. Like they are the example that I was giving at the beginning of like a couple who very clearly really respects one another. And I think is going to see a lot of success in the race because of how well that they can communicate and respect one another in a way that you have to, if you work with your partner, you know, like they work together in like a very close capacity every single day to make these videos and to do their online work. So yeah.
I believe that is all she wrote. We are going out on a bang. So yeah, I do believe as we close in on the marina there, and hope I don't know if we ever see the Greek goddess again. That is the credit sequence for The Amazing Race. And maybe some more epiphanies will come about once, you know, we get to see it again and again and again, assumingly every week. I can't remember, actually, Jess, is this like something they only play in the first episode? Do they usually cut it for time? I can't remember.
I think they usually cut it for time, but we'll see.
All right, well, let's get into some other stuff coming out of The Amazing Race. I want to briefly touch on social media because, you know, there was a fair amount of chatter going on, obviously, with these people having claims to fame, you know, that they would have the opportunity to sort of shine a spotlight on The Amazing Race. But I guess the thing I really want to shine a spotlight on this week is, as we mentioned before, Kim and Penn, so I believe they already have a podcast, right, Jess? They already had one leading into The Amazing Race, like Gary and D'Angelo did.
Yeah, kind of a general purpose, like it's kind of parenting focused, but yeah, it's kind of a general interest thing.
Okay, so now they've sort of like oriented it to be Amazing Race focused, and I'm very glad that teams do this, right? Like this happened, I believe they did this with Becca and Floyd back in season 29. They were allowed to do it. I know that obviously D'Angelo and Gary like had so many teams on their podcast over the last season. So you can never tell when CBS sort of lets them off the leash or not, but seems like so far so good. So Kim and Penn did a conversation on their podcast about legs 1 and 2. I'll read through some highlights. I encourage people to check it out. It's about an hour long, but I'll read some fun facts, get both of your reactions to it. First, even though we did not get a formal starting line, I guess the starting line was going out of the airport in London, right? Heathrow Airport.
Yeah.
And it started with a bang. as apparently, according to Kim and Penn, there was a dip off the curb at the airport that, according to them, nearly everyone tripped and fell into immediately.
Why didn't we see that? That's okay, but that's what I said. I love the starting race when they fall. It's like very exciting. It's how we should start the amazing race. Like, I love it because I would fall. So I can't believe we missed that. That's so disappointing.
Yeah, Jess, would you want to start season 33 that way?
Of course. Like, people falling down, like, there's been entire media empires built on being entertained by people falling down.
Yeah, where's Alonso Ribeiro when you need it?
I was about to say, I love me some AFV. Mm-hmm.
So when talking about preparation for the race, again, Kim and Penn, we should acknowledge, are super duper fans to the point where Kim apparently made a Google Doc going in of like why each team lost, like what they don't need to do. And that plan sort of went out the window as soon as they went into the race. So it also speaks to, again, preparation versus execution. Like, as an example, they made it a rule to never take the detour option that was adjudicated. The one where, like, you do something and then a judge walks over and says, okay, you're good, because they don't want to put that power into other people's hands. Cut to the first two legs, they did the exact opposite. Yep. So it just really shows that as much as you can prepare, when that adrenaline's flowing and you're going off how much exhaustion, like, you might just make a choice and going off of your gut.
Yeah, it's true. I think planning, you know, the old adage about planning being very, what is the exact quote, Mike? Plans and planning.
Yes. Yeah,
Eisenhower.
Like, yeah. It's a lot of P words. If I remember, like, practical planning makes purposeful something or other. Well,
there's that one. And then there's plans are useless, but planning is indispensable, I think, is the old adage.
So let's talk to the detour for a second. So we had speculated as to, like, what was going on with the pieces of paper / the social distancing. Apparently at Artist's Den, there were only 6 stations, according to Kim and Penn. So that's interesting. That could have been a limited quantity detour if the vast majority of teams had taken Artist's Den. But they shouldn't have, because apparently Anthony and Spencer, after the leg, told Kim and Penn that the DigiBend detour took them 10 minutes to do.
Oh, my God.
That is wild.
Yeah.
But they ran, probably. They probably were able to, like, sprint the whole time, right?
Well, they took taxis. And the taxi, they said their taxi rides were, like, 2 minutes apiece.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. That's ridiculous.
They should have had to do that on foot.
Yeah.
That should have been an on-foot thing.
Yeah.
For sure.
It should take 10 minutes to complete a detour. I think we should. That's a pretty much tantamount rule of production.
Because, you know, I'm like, I always pick the wrong detour, because I'm never going to pick the detour that's, like, very physical, because I feel like I would just be terrible at all of the physical ones. Like, this is also the thing. If I knew I was going on the Amazing Race, I would, like, for sure try to train as much as humanly possible beforehand. So I, like, felt like I could at least, you know, run 3 miles without passing out or, like, carry something heavy, you know. But, like, I would have thought, like, as someone who is more artistic, like, you know, completing a puzzle and doing, like, an art project of gluing would have been an easier task than, like, running all around the city, but clearly not. And yeah, that's ridiculous. That's completely ridiculous that they were able to do it in 10 minutes. Wow.
So another thing that also factored into, like, maybe this leg sort of almost felt like a 24-hour leg, because apparently this pit stop was only about 5 or 6 hours. As we know, leg one took place at night, leg two took place during the day. Kim and Penn said they got about, like, 5 to 6 hours of sleep. But yeah, we are a far call from, you know, what was it, the 12 to 24-hour pit stops that we used to see back in the early days of the race.
Yeah, well, I think, as I recall, last season, there were a lot of legs where there just wasn't a pit stop, if they didn't show it. They're just
First leg last season was they were in Trinidad and Tobago and they got to keep on racing. So
yeah,
like, they start off that right off.
That
the
was so good.
That was a good.
Sorry, idea. That leg was so good. That's what got me into the show. That music challenge was so compelling, because you have, you know, like, the fact that you have one team member who, like, has to sit on the sidelines and they're like, I could do this in my sleep. And the other team member, like, straight up cannot do it. Like, that is what I wanted to see on like a task like that. That's, like, so, you know, just, like, random and very difficult and can, like, lead to high frustration. Like, that's when you get the most exciting moments on the race, I feel.
Yeah. But as I understand it, they were really trying to slim down as far as like production days. So last season, even when they didn't say it was a keep on racing leg, there were a lot of legs that were keep on racing legs.
Yeah. So. Speaking of roadblocks, no drums to be found, but plenty of struggles. So they break down, obviously, the big to do as to like Penn's snow meltdown on the mail rail. So apparently the plan was always to have Penn do the first roadblock just because Kim was like a super anxious individual and was like, I would have a meltdown if I had to do the first roadblock because I don't want to let my team down. So Penn was going to do it no matter what. Apparently, according to them, and Penn doesn't give a lot of excuses as to like why he did what he did. He's like, I just overthought it. It was really stupid. It's a clue. A clue is a clue. Why would it not be a clue? But apparently in the roadblock clue, there was a name and a zip code just sort of like printed on it, which made him overthink that, okay, I'm clearly looking for an envelope. Maybe it's a matching zip code. Maybe it's I'm looking for that specific name. I'm not entirely sure. They also say that apparently Anthony came back not only with an envelope, but also holding a package as well, maybe to sort of like, you know, hedge his bets in case it ended up not just being the envelope. And that confused him and Ray to the point that they thought, okay, I guess we need a box as well. So again, I don't think they would necessarily say it was an excuse for why they did what they did, but some interesting introspection as to maybe some of the confusing things that were thrown out that really sent them into a tailspin.
Yeah, well, you know, that's always tricky. They're always trying to trick you like that.
I think it's always like the thing about The Amazing Race that I like really love is that I would walk up. I know that I personally would walk up to most detours, especially when it's like you have to find something or you have to do, you know what I mean? Like I would walk up and get incredibly overwhelmed with the enormity of the task and start to like completely freak out. But because it's, you know, so small, I would assume that he was probably like, this is going to be a completely enormous task. It's the first detour. It's going to be a gigantic, enormous task. And the fact that it wasn't probably is what threw them off.
Yeah. I mean, Kim in the video just said that this might be one of the easiest roadblocks ever, which, listen, it's no speed bump eating ice cream, but I considering where that envelope was placed, I can't think of many other, especially opening roadblocks that were so straightforward.
Yeah, it's true. But I think sometimes they design a task that's more about showing you an interesting thing than it is about performing anything with any kind of skill. And I think this was like, this is a cool thing we can do on the race. And it doesn't really matter what the task is ultimately, because we just want people to ride in those cool little trains.
Mm-hmm. So one other thing that they brought up is a task was actually cut from the edit that they did. Supposedly, the original idea was there's this thing called the Orbit Tower, which I guess is like one of the biggest metal slides in Europe. I think it's one of those like slides you go on at the carnival, right? Like those metal slides where you sit in a potato sack and you go down it. Apparently, one of their tasks was that they were supposed to climb all the way up and slide down it. Evidently, because of the weather, because of the rain and the fog, all they had to do was just go up and then just go back down the stairs. So I think for many reasons, it's understandable why it got cut.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I don't need to see that.
No.
Yeah, that would have been really lame.
There's only so much, again, like the tasks were subpar, but at least we did not get shown a task where they literally walked upstairs and then walked back downstairs again.
I did watch that season of The Amazing Race, though, where the girl lost because she wouldn't go down the water slide.
It's a good point.
So I understand the slide task. I do think that there is some Amazing Race iconic moments that have come from it. But that stinks they couldn't go down it because of the weather.
All right. So as we move on from the Holderness stuff, Jess, was there any other secret scenes? I'm sorry, some before we get to secret scenes, some social media things that you wanted to highlight from the stuff that poured in like envelopes from the Amazing Racers this past week?
I mean, I wanted to highlight there was a very funny tweet from our very own Jessica Frey, who said we didn't think this needed to be a rule, but it's a new era. And she has the galaxy brain meme. And we have the first frame with the little tiny brain says, we're on the Amazing Race. And brain with like a little bit glowing says, read the clue. The brain that's glowing a lot, is this too easy for the Amazing Race? And then the final galaxy brain frame says, if it says Amazing Race, it's a clue. I thought that was hilarious. Give her a shout out.
Such a great line from Caro. Really, I the more I think about it, the more I love it. Just for future reference, if it says Amazing Race, it's a clue.
Yeah, that was the best. I think that goes right in the JL rules.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, let's get into some secret scenes. So we have some audio from some, but before I want to, you know, just talk about some. Maggie, you made mention before of Arun trying to go to the bathroom after they left the cards. Can you talk this through again and give your reactions to your favorite team of these first couple legs?
I love them. And so they finish their dart task. And I think it just like goes to show like Arun and Natalia are gigantic fans. Arun is so excited to be there. He's like, you don't want to take another sip of your beer? Like, come on, take another sip. And she's like, no, we have to go. And he's like, okay, well, I have to go to the bathroom. And she was like, Dad, we're going to lose the race because you went to the bathroom. And he's like, oh, pshaw, if that's why we lose the race, come on. So he goes to the bathroom. She's waiting in the car and she's like totally freaking out. He gets in and he's like, oh, I forgot the fanny pack. And she was like, Dad, it's so important. The fanny pack, I'm going to have to hold it the rest of the time. And he's like, oh, Natalia, come on. Why are you getting on my case? And it's just, it's really cute. I thought the whole thing was super cute and very fun. And then it also goes into, you know, the other secret scene, which I don't know if you want to talk about it yet, Mike, but the other secret scene with them where they're at the airport and somebody thinks that they're married, not father, daughter. And they were both like, no, like hard no, which honestly, it's ridiculous. They have the exact same face. Like, why would you think that they're married? They look identical. And as a daughter who looks just like her father, identical to her father, like I thought it was just like odd that people thought that they were married because they very clearly to me are father daughter.
Yeah. Just what did you make of Arun and Natalia being identified as a couple? Should we be looking at Arun's skincare routine and trying to mimic it for his seeming agelessness?
I mean, he does look young for his age. I'm not sure I would peg him immediately as being her father. I might have thought they were siblings. But yeah, that was, I would never have gone to the well of married couple. I would always wait for people, if I'm talking to a team, I would always wait for them to tell me what the connection is.
Yeah. And maybe, I don't know, maybe his skin is so good because he just takes it carefree, right? Like, it might be in a race, but let's go to the bathroom. Let's drink some beer. Ironically enough, that Arun couldn't hold it, and then he ends up not holding on to the fanny pack as a result.
Yeah, this was a rough first leg for Arun.
We should also mention here a couple things from the Holderness family. So there's some stuff like Penn tells Phil he always wanted to scream in a museum. Is that on anyone's bucket list, to scream in a museum?
It is now.
I suppose so. I don't know if I want to like scream. I don't know. I mean, I guess it's like a John Mayer bucket list, right? On the realm of, I want to run through the halls of my high school. I want to scream in a museum.
Wow.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm not entirely sure. But actually, you know what? That segues perfectly into some of our audio, because here is some Kim and Penn stuff that I would like to play. As we talked about, Kim and Penn, I don't know if you heard, Maggie, they met the Queen and Boris Johnson, who were having a nosh. What did you make of that? Look, you're an actress. I'm certainly, you know, you could sort of look behind the lens of some of these people that are hired to be sort of these extras or task giver judges on The Amazing Race. What did you make of the whole meet with the Queen and Boris Johnson of it all?
I thought it was so cute. I actually really love how they get, you know, people from the countries to give the clues. Like last season, my roommate and I always joke around because last season, when they were in Cambodia, they had to get a clue from like a Cambodian monk, and he went to give the clue to the person and like stared at the camera the whole time, like low-key giggling to himself. Like he was like so like excited that he was on camera, and we thought it was so funny that now we like will reference it all the time. And I love that they get, you know, people from really the culture to do it. So I thought it was super fun that they had these, you know, impersonators sitting together, having a nosh. And I love when they do stuff like that. I think that that's like what makes The Amazing Race so awesome.
All right. Well, let's hear from Kim and Penn as they talk about meeting the Queen. And Penn reveals maybe some deeply held secrets about a possible hall pass from across the pond.
I got a little sugar from the Queen. She's the second hottest woman in London.
Who's the first one?
Helen Mirren.
Oh, man.
I got a thing for old people.
That's why he's with me.
That's right. I do have a thing for Helen Mirren.
Oh, that's on his list.
All right, so look out, Helen Mirren. Good thing she wasn't in town, I assume, because Penn is coming for you.
Penn's going to write a BuzzFeed article that says the five hottest old ladies on my hall pass list.
Wow. I got nothing, guys. That's
yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I don't want to yuck anyone's yum, but like, let me pose the question here: Is she up there?
She's a beautiful
Helen Mirren
woman.
Is beautiful. She's beautiful, Mike. She is.
I suppose so, but I don't know. I'm trying to think about like other British women. I don't know. I might do Judi Dench over Helen Mirren personally.
Really?
I would do Maggie Smith above Helen Mirren.
See, as somebody who like was introduced to Maggie Smith as Professor McGonagall, like I just always will view her as that versus, you know, any other one of her roles or from her earlier years. But Helen Mirren is like has the gorgeous gray bob and she always looks amazing on the red carpets. I understand Helen Mirren. I do. It was when he said he had a thing for old people that I was a bit like, huh, what an interesting statement, Penn.
I feel like Helen Mirren is kind of timeless. I'm not sure I would go immediately to the well of old people.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. That's why I was like, I understand him thinking Helen Mirren is beautiful. It was that statement afterwards that I was like, maybe we will get a BuzzFeed article out of this. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Or it might be instead of like a kiss count, maybe Penn will find some sort of other, you know, older woman in every country that he visits that he becomes enamored with and sort of builds his own gallery scrapbook of memories with regards to who that eventual hall pass will be given out to.
I really feel uncomfortable with the amount of objectification that would entail.
Yeah, I don't know if Penn would be the one to do it either. He'd overthink it, right? All right. I'm not getting the science here. I don't know exactly I don't know if this is really for me or if this is doing it for the cameras. And he just sent himself into a spiral in that regard. All right, let's move on. Let's move on to Lulu and Lala. Talk about spiraling. Lulu and Lala, they may not be clones. They definitely are not clones. Obviously, they have some differences here. We heard obviously about Lulu's romantic, you know, situations are obviously different than Lala, but they have a fair number of differences, according to them. This is Lulu and Lala speaking about ways that we could tell them apart.
And sometimes we annoy each other.
Yes. Oh, God, yes. She takes an hour to brush her teeth. It gets under my skin so much. It's like, come
That's
on.
That's not true. I like to have my teeth clean. And you make a mess when you brush your teeth. Water or toothpaste all over the place. It's because you're what? You're rushing. If you were to take your time.
It's just little things like that that get under her skin. Certain things, the way she folds her clothes.
I hate how she ties her shoe. Like, I feel like she's troubling herself the way that she does it. Just
what do? The bunny ears?
No, what am I, 3 years old? No, but you, like,
you do one ear and then flip the other.
You take the shoelace, and then you, like, flip it. What, like, you just take forever doing it. Tie the damn shoe and keep it going.
I enjoy, this is my guilty pleasure, which most people will find disgusting. I love watching pimple popper
that is
on IG or on YouTube. I find it fascinating. I know it's the
last.
She
spent hours watching people pop. That's just
ugh. It's nasty. I recognize it, but I don't know. It's entertaining to me.
Yeah. Okay. So we found out a lot about these twins, actually, more so than I wanted to know, particularly about their internet browsing history.
I have a question for both of you. Like, you know how, like, sometimes twins, like, not all twins, I don't want to make a sweeping statement, but, like, you know how sometimes they can be, like, a little weird? Like, a little, like, too close, you know? No? Maybe that's just an experience I had with adult twins.
I'll be candid, I don't know many adult twins, so.
Yeah, I had an experience once with adult twins who were, like, very, very close, lived together, like, shared every type of clothing that they had in a way that I was like, maybe some clothes you keep separate, you know, I don't know. But like, I wonder if like they are like Very clearly the type of twins, though, who just know each other. So like they very clearly like think the same. The fact that they're like talking about tying their shoes, that they know how the other person ties their shoe and it annoys them. That is someone who has been together for almost like 30 years of their life for so many moments that like that is the little thing that drives them crazy. I think mm-hmm. that that's like very fun and speaks to like how close their bond is. But I also think that that like shows, you know, that thing that I was talking about at the beginning, like respect level out of teammates. Like, I'm not sure how, like if they're getting mad at each other for the way that they brush their teeth and like that's one of their like main issues with each other, like every little thing they do on the race, I'm sure that they're going to be like, nope, over it, you know?
Now, Jess, we found a way to tell them apart, right? One of them loves pimple popper videos and one brushes their teeth too slowly.
Wow, they look alike, but they're so different.
In so many ways. I think we need to watch how they tie their shoes, and that's how we'll know. If one of them does the wraparound, then we'll know, okay, that's Lala, and then the other one must be Lulu. Because we'll see. I think we'll make it a challenge to identify which twin is which by the end.
I just feel really bad because when I started podcasting about The Amazing Race for Rob, I used to make a point of trying to figure out how to tell the identical twin teams apart. And I let it happen organically now. I don't go into the season anymore with like a list of things that I've observed from studying them closely.
All right.
I feel they look so similar that it's the type of thing where like if you saw them together and you like then you could discern them apart. But if I just saw one of them, I would have no idea which one it was. You know, like I would be like, I don't have the reference of like the longer face compared to her sister, you know?
You would have been hoodwinked by those opening credits then, right? You saw one, you're like, oh my God, there's two of you.
Now that's why I was like, a clone.
Right. Here's your toothbrush. Let's see who gets sloppy and who doesn't. That's how the only way we can tell you apart.
Exactly.
All right, one last clip here, and this is actually going to segue into our game for this week. So Michael and Mo, you know, may they rest in peace on the race. This is one of the rare moments they had in London. They're going to talk to their cabbie. And look, many people had assumptions about British culture over the course and history over the course of this episode. Mo has his own supposition about a piece of British slang, and he is going to get very much corrected by their cabbie.
Hopefully, man, we pull up right to the red box. That'll be lovely.
Right.
Lovely.
Lovely, mate.
Lovely, bloke.
No, mate, isn't it? That's not nice.
Bloke. Yeah, bloke.
Bloke?
Bloke.
Hmm.
Chris, tell him what bloke means.
I was gonna say, mate, that's universal.
Mate. Bloke.
All right. So at least Michael and Mo didn't learn to have a lot of time on The Amazing Race, but at least they learned that it is indeed bloke and not bloat.
That's cute. I thought this whole conversation was cute. I thought the cab driver was really funny when he thought he was saying blow. And he was like, well, I think that's universal. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what to tell you.
Imagine these two men and a camera crew that are from America getting in your car and being like, let me ask you about blow. Like, how do you respond to that? You know, like, okay, is this a trapping situation? Like, am I being conned into something? I'm not sure. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Listen, I do not mean to impugn any of these teams whatsoever. I feel like some common sense has to be applied. You can't call someone bloat. That makes no sense. Why would you call a person bloat?
I think that that's just, you know, they've never like take it. They've clearly never like really taken the time to watch British television or anything like that. So when you just hear them saying bloke, you're just going to be like, oh, bloke. You know, it's like the K is so far back in your throat that they're like, oh, I guess it's bloke.
Oh, is it throat or is it throat? I don't know.
Exactly.
It's all similar sounds. Well, so speaking of British jargon, I want to finish off our tar pits here with a game that has been drummed up by the great Sarah Carradine, who had produced many games over the course of the Tar Pit season 32. And this is around British slang. So, for example, when it comes to Bobbies, some people thought it was just a man named Bobby. Sarah does point out that police officers are called Bobbies after Sir Robert Peel, the man who established the London Metropolitan Police Force in 1829. So Bobby does indeed refer to a person, even though he is very much, you know, long gone by now. But what about some other words and phrases? So this is going to be super simple. We'll go back and forth here. I'm going to give you a term from British slang. You tell me what you think it means. And maybe you'll be right, maybe you'll be wrong, but I think we'll all be educated at the end of the day. And maybe this means we can go into London when things open up a bit more knowledgeable than perhaps some of our beleaguered amazing race teams. Jess, I'm going to start with you.
Okay.
What are jakes?
Jakes. Do they have anything to do with sheeps and poop?
No, they do not.
Okay, jakes. I'm not sure I actually know this one, Mike. But I'm just going to guess sheep and poop for every single one of these in tribute to Phil Kogan.
Exactly. Unfortunately, it's not New Zealand slang. It'd be much more scatological from that perspective.
Of course.
But no, jakes are actually a bit one and the same with bobbies. Jakes are a term for the police.
All right. Okay.
So if they were asked to look for a jake, it would actually be a very similar confusion with a lot of these teams. On the other, go ahead, Jess.
It's like, you know, here in the States, we would call them the fuzz or.
Mm-hmm.
Or the bulls or the pigs, if we're feeling political.
Now, Maggie, we talked about the jakes. What are the jacks?
The beanstalk variety?
The beanstalk variety.
Like a jack of the beanstalk variety? I feel like a jack is a farmer.
Okay, that makes sense if you're talking about, like, growing beans. No, the jacks is the toilet.
Oh, okay.
As in, where's the jacks? I'm busting. Got it.
I mean,
as in, Arun had to use the jacks after leaving the dirt place.
Maybe you can put a beanstalk in a jack, you know? I don't know. Sorry. I
mean, hopefully not.
Sorry.
I don't know what you, you know, hopefully you didn't swallow any beans that did that. Jess, what is the knowledge?
The knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. This is
that sounds like another CBS primetime show after The Promoter.
Good Lord. Yeah. Stay tuned for the knowledge. This feels like sort of vaguely Masonic. I don't know.
So knowledge.
Wait. You know this one, Mike.
Oh, good.
There was an amazing race challenge about this. The knowledge is what London taxicab drivers have to learn before they can become London taxi drivers. As famously depicted in the challenge at the end of the reality TV star season of The Amazing Race, and also as portrayed in the Up documentary series.
You are 100% correct. Yes, that is the knowledge. Taxicab drivers have to take that very rigorous memorization test to be able to become a taxi driver. Sarah also writes that apparently it is illegal to yell taxi in London. So maybe that's why Anthony and Spencer had such a tough time getting a cab.
Wow. Why is it illegal? Do we know?
I don't know. Is it not proper enough? Does it not fall under good etiquette rules to shout?
Yeah.
Taxi
is it just annoying?
I mean, they can't hear you anyway. It's kind of a futile gesture to yell taxi in the first place.
If there's something that's futile, it is England. So I guess that does make sense. All right, Maggie, what is copping off? We did talk about cops, but what does copping off mean?
Well, I know what copping a feel means.
Oh, boy.
Yikes.
Pretty universal, much like blow.
Yeah. Okay. Copping off. Tattling? Like telling on someone?
Copping off means making out with, as in Penn would like to be copping off with Helen Mirren.
Like snogging.
Yeah, exactly. It's another version of snogging.
Got it.
Jess, what does to crease mean? As in, I was creasing.
I was creasing. Wow. That's another new one on me. I have not heard creasing before. does this have anything to do with like dressing nicely, like your pants are creased?
That's good context clues, but no. Crease means to laugh hysterically.
Ah, okay. Like you're...
like crease your face.
Oh, yeah. You're like making wrinkles on your face because you're laughing so much. Mm-hmm.
Like laugh lines.
Yeah, exactly. Maggie, what does to touch yard mean?
To touch yard. To go play in your backyard. I don't know.
Very simplistic explanation. I mean, you're not too far. Actually, to touch yard means to reach home. So if it's like, I had a hard day at work, I'm ready to touch yard, just means to go home.
That makes perfect sense to me, actually.
Only a couple more left here. Jess, what does beast mean in British slang?
Beast is not... well, I know what it would mean here in the States. Like, it would mean to be really great at something. Like, if is beast a noun or a verb in this context?
Adjective.
Adjective. So you're the beast something.
Yeah, so like Jess Lee's is so beast. If we're coming up with a rhyming device.
So it'd be like being really, really great at something, which would make sense because the guy on the UK version of The Chase, who's like a million feet tall, they call him the Beast. So he's super great at trivia.
Okay, yeah. So being Beast apparently is very cool. So yeah, evidently he's also some suave as well.
Okay. Well.
Maggie, what does big yourself up mean? For example, Rob Cicernino has never won to big himself up.
Like talk yourself up. Like yes,
to be boastful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So never one to big yourself up, and as opposed to Peloton, which certainly bigged itself up in many ways a couple of months ago. Finally, Jess, what does mashed mean?
Mashed.
Yeah.
Like as in a past tense verb or as an adjective?
Another adjective.
Okay. Can you use it in a sentence?
I was too mashed to touch yard.
So that would be wasted, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yep, drunk or high. So maybe if you think that bloke means bloat, you might be mashed on blow, as an example.
All right, then.
Yeah, hopefully, I know that we're not leaving the UK, so maybe some of these will apply next week. But if we want to open our minds up even more to UK slang, thank you to Sarah Carradine, as always, and looking forward to hopefully many more games over the course of the Tar Pit. Maggie, any other things you want to say about the Amazing Race now that we've opened the floodgates and allowed you to talk on a public platform about
the show? Oh my gosh, I just like thank you for letting me talk at you for the first 20 minutes of this podcast. I did have like something that I wanted to bring up, but now I can't really remember what it was. I think maybe it had to do with the, nope, it's gone. But if I think of anything else, I'll post about it online, or if you'll have me back later in the season, I would love to come back and talk more. I think it's just so the Amazing Race. Okay. Editing. I did want to talk about this.
Okay.
Amazing Race. When you binge it, they edit it all exactly the same. And I now, like, if you want to, I don't really follow Edgic on Survivor, but I can tell you the Edgic for The Amazing Race. Like, I know exactly. I can't really tell you. I can tell you by probably episode 3 who's going to win. Okay. And I can always tell you when it's a race to the mat, who is going to win the race to the mat. Like, it's very, very clear how they edit it. And even I've been watching earlier seasons. So this week when I was watching, I was like, I'm going to try my theory. And I was right with like the race to the mat. So I'm interested to see if after a couple episodes in, my prediction about who's going to win will come true.
So I'm intrigued. What is the hack to the mat race?
Whoever is leading when they start to make it seem like they're close is who's leading and who's going to make it to the mat first. There is never like a subversive, we're racing. Like they'll show you if the person overtakes them because it's very exciting. Like they're not like if somebody leaves the pit stop first and is racing and then the other person calls a cab and is like racing, unless we see the person in the first car start to get hopelessly lost, they're going to beat them.
Mm-hmm. Jess, facts confirmed, thumbs up.
That all seems logical to me. Now I'm going to be watching for it, though. This is not something I've really thought about.
Oh, I'm sorry, Meg, if I've spoiled it for people.
No, it's fine. Last season, Jess and I kind of broke Rob's brain when we talked about the inter-commercial break freeze versus the in the middle of the segment freeze. So we're just continuing to bust open the editing style. So maybe we'll change it up for future seasons. What's to say?
We've also got the personal story bump. That's a big one.
Yeah, of course, that didn't exist for this opening episode because it was literally everyone's personal story bump. But we'll definitely track that moving forward.
Oh, and I did have one more thing to say. Now I can remember what I was going to say. So I'm watching this season with the Miss America, or the one who had the viral video of Miss America. And I kept referring to them, the lesbian team on that season. I kept referring to them as the evil lesbians because that's how they were edited the whole seasons to be villains. And I thought that they were so fun on the show. Like, I thought they were such fun characters. And they had a quote that was really, really interesting to me that really stuck with me through the rest of my Amazing Race watching, which is like they were really fighting on one leg. And then at the start of the day of the next leg, they were like, we are here understanding that we are not battling each other. We're battling the other teams. Like, we're a united front battling the other teams. And those are the teams that always succeed, are the ones who recognize that, like, they're my partner in crime versus, like, they're my obstacle to winning. And I think that that's just, like, a very interesting, like, psyche thing to look at versus how, like, for how the teams are looking at themselves versus each other. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, Maggie, you have brought so much psychoanalysis to
really?
And I absolutely love it. Because, again, like Jess talked about in the beginning, like, these are not necessarily conversations that we have about those dynamics.
Really? I talk about. Like, this is the reason that I like it. Like, I'm just watching someone race. Like, that's not what's exciting to me about watching it. Because I can understand the editing hack. So I'm like, okay, I can basically, from the beginning of the episode, tell you who's going to get eliminated. But what's so interesting to me is watching the way that the teams interact with each other and the teams at large. And even like when they talk to Phil on the mat, like there's so much to be said about a team member who sprints ahead of their partner and is like, come on, to them on the mat versus a team member who holds their partner's hand while they get onto the mat, or a team member who like will race ahead and be like, come on, come on, come on, like cheering them on versus like, come on, you, like, let's get here. I think that there's so much to be said about even that. Like, that tells me so much about how a team and like how they're going to do.
All right. So we're about to touch yard here and reach the end of this podcast. Maggie, you talked about, you know, posting online. For people who might not know what you do out on the podcast sphere, what do you have going on, and how can people, if they want to see what you're up to on social media, reach out to you?
Yeah. So if you are interested, I do the podcast, the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City Rehap Up with the amazing Jacob Jones. We have a ton of fun over there. So even if you don't watch the show, like, you can come and hang out with us. We talk a lot. Like, it's all jokes. It's fun. Like, you can pretty much pick up on what's going on. It's not really rocket science on that show. So yeah, if you listen to that comes out every Monday. Or we record Monday night, so it comes out Monday nights or Tuesday morning. Celebrity Big Brother is coming up, so I'm going to be covering that. And I'm not on Twitter right now, but you can find me on Instagram at @MLMorgan_, and you can find me on TikTok at @MLMorgan_.
Is there a pair from The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City that you think would make a fun Amazing Race team?
Literally, all of them, like, for so many different reasons. I would love to see Heather and Whitney. So Heather and Whitney, if you don't watch, they basically they're cousins technically. And through, like, you know, they're like 17th cousins once removed or something, because they're both Mormons. So basically all Mormons who live in Utah are related somehow. And so they're cousins, and they have a huge conflict with my favorite housewife on the show, Lisa Barlow. And at the first reunion, Lisa Barlow says, Whitney, Heather, bad weather, spin the truth, tornado. So the bad weather team of Whitney and Heather, I think, would be iconic on the Amazing Race. I would love to see it.
Storms are coming. Here come your weather girls. I love that. All right, Jess, I know you talked about it a bit at the end of our podcast with Rob, but if you want to talk about your appearance on Extra Hot, great. Again, since I believe it actually has now come out since we recorded that.
No, it hasn't come out yet. I'm recording on Monday. Okay. Yeah, so it'll come out in the middle of next week. And very excited to break down Amazing Race with three people that are, I forced them to come back to it after many years of not watching it. But these are the people that basically invented the concept of recapping a television show. So I'm going to be very interested to speak to them about a show that they were there for the birth of it. And now bringing them back in to talk about it again will be really fun.
They're going to miss the head turns. I can tell you that. They're really going to miss that credit sequence.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to hear all of the things that they're going to be like, well, why isn't this here anymore? Why is this different now? So, yeah, looking forward to it.
And I talked about all my stuff over on the other podcast that we did, which if you haven't checked it out at this point, thank you for devoting 2 hours to this. But go back and watch that. That was a very fun recap that we had with Rob talking through everything. And of course, we'll be back next week covering week 2, episode 3, or leg 3, as things take a dramatic turn. The last leg of the Amazing Race pre-pandemic. It is sure to be really interesting. Seems like we're getting an elimination as well as a production shutdown. I'm very intrigued to see what happens. Thank you all so much for listening. It was really a fun idea to bring back the Tar Pit, to just bring in all these odds and ends of a big show like the Amazing Race. Hopefully, I think we could do a lot of these throughout the season. There are certainly guests that we have in mind to bring on. If you have any suggested guests, feel free to reach out to us as well. You can always email us, amazingrace@robhasawebsite.com. If you go to robhasawebsite.com/TAR questions, you can also submit questions there for us to answer on this podcast. And also tweet at us at Rob Cicernino, at a Mike Bloom type, at Haymaker Hattie for Jess, and of course, at Rob Has a Podcast. Thank you all so much for listening. We'll be back next Thursday covering episode 3, or leg 3, of The Amazing Race 33. Till then, take care. Bye-bye.